Welcome to the Above Politics Show.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
Dedicated to intelligent discussion and debate of serious political issues in the U.S. and around the globe.
Absolutely unrealistic.
Borrowing money from China to finance the war in Iraq.
President Bush continues to not let facts get in the way of his ideology.
From AbovePolitics.com, this is the Above Politics Show.
So we're here today with Robert Burnett, who's been on Above Politics with us before, has led and is leading a very interesting life this time around, and through his experiences growing up and living in Africa, has some unique insight into what's going on now. And as he grew up in the area that is now called Zimbabwe, has really topical insights that may have a lot to do with the near future. So, let's welcome Rob to the program. Hello, Rob.
Hi, Jim. Nice to see you again. How are you doing?
Pretty good. I'm just getting over the flu, but I don't think they need to know that.
Well, you know, it's, we should be interested in other person's welfare, shouldn't we? Also, it's been pretty cold, hasn't it, eh?
Yes.
At least the sun's out today and blue skies, that makes a person feel better.
Yeah, when I saw the temperature earlier, it was minus 23 Celsius here, which is probably about 5 below 0 Fahrenheit.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, you should be more used to it than me.
Probably.
Thanks for the invite again,
Jim,
to discuss a few important things.
Yes. What is the title of your latest book?
It's Seeking Sanity.
Seeking Sanity.
Yeah, which I think a lot of our listeners would agree could be something that welcome with all that's going on in the world right now?
I think there are a lot of people seeking sanity at the moment, tell you the truth.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay, now, is this autobiographical, or is this a fiction, or what type of book is it?
Good question. As you know, I've written quite a number of books.
Mm-hmm.
This one in particular is based on what we call fact and fiction. I think they call it faction or fiction or whatever. Anyway, it's based on some fact and fiction. The important thing, actually, Jim, is the inspiration to write the book.
Mm-hmm.
When I say the inspiration to write the book, it's like it was a higher energy or a voice, even if you like, inspiring me to couple some life's experiences of the past into the present and looking to the future, based in my homeland, which is now, as you rightly said, Zimbabwe, and it used to be known as Rhodesia.
Mm-hmm.
And just fire away, ask whatever you need to on the actual book.
Okay, now, well, go to your life experience first. You were sort of, inducted or initiated into practices, spiritual practices by a tribe in the Zimbabwe area?
Well, yes, but that was a little bit later on. Let me reel back a little bit for you. I was born in what was then known as Rhodesia,
right,
which is, we know now, as Zimbabwe. There were a couple of instances that were, shall we say, awakening experiences in my homeland. The first being when I was about the age of 7, when I saw what they termed a flying saucer.
Right.
And that was highly significant to me in the reaction of others around me, i.e. those of religious leanings and beliefs. Suddenly you saw the more sort of negative reaction of, you didn't really see that. That was all in your imagination, don't mention it to anybody, but it stuck with me. It was like an impression. I thought, well, what's it doing in this small little land? It's definitely not of this earth. The way it suddenly appeared and hovered and then suddenly disappeared at more than the speed of light. So that was impressionable.
Mm-hmm.
And as you probably know, Jim, Rhodesia stroke Zimbabwe is a very highly political land.
It is, yes.
Isn't it, really? And as this really is a political show, I guess we should bring a bit of the politics into it.
Yes.
Don't you agree?
Right.
Okay.
Okay, now family politics, though. I think that you were, from what you've said before, your grandmother, your elders, etc., figured that if you didn't talk about it, it didn't exist, right?
Yeah, you're talking like with the experience of the flying,
saucer.
All right, well, let me give you a brief background there. Basically, we ended up as two families, coupled. I lost my mum at an early age in Rhodesia. My dad remarried, but into an Afrikaans, very Afrikaans-inclined family.
Okay.
But of a Baptist background.
Mm-hmm.
So we were effectively herded into that type of belief and religion, if you like. Now, I'm talking about mission work here.
Right.
For example,
evangelical, right.
Yeah, along those lines, but for some reason, I didn't quite get my head around it. I couldn't understand, for example, people on 2 hours on, a Sunday, being very righteous and honorable to others, and then, you know, very quickly slipping back into the world's vibrations and choosing the next Sunday to do the same. But what hit me most, this was another awakening, Jim, at an early age, was I couldn't understand why there were so many different religions, i.e. we were of a Baptist background,
mm-hmm.
and then you would go to school and you would line up in your different categories, i.e. Presbyterians, Methodists, etc., Church of England. And I thought, well, what's this about? Aren't they all on the same teachings? So why do you have to be one or the other? Why do you have to be categorized?
Huh.
I'd say this was when I was about 10, and I thought, this is division. Why are you having divisions at the very core, the basic teachings? So my mind was not just accepting anything.
Yes.
Straight away. But more significant than that, Jim, is in 1965, when I was still a young man, my country was virtually at a crossroads in the days when it was Rhodesia. And we had a big issue with the British regards our independence, our legality to independence. Anyway, to cut a long story short, at the age of 18, when my Prime Minister at the time, Ian Douglas Smith, who ended up being titled Rebel for his actions on declaring UDI, and we were also coupled with him as rebels of the world, I sat on a wall listening to this declaration, knowing full well that a perfectly workable and amenable political solution, eventually leading to majority rule, had actually been agreed and signed. And then it was just like put into file 13. And I was about 16 at the time, and I thought, there's more to this. There's something we're not being told.
Mm-hmm.
And as life's journeys went on, then the reasons for seeing that flying saucer, the reasons for being brought up in a pretty Afrikaans-type background, authoritative home, my country being sold out, these things sort of started to show some other instinct, if you like, or awakening. And I thought, there's something more to this than meets the eye.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we being just thrown to the wolves for what they call responsible majority rule? There's something not right. Okay, I don't want to dwell on this for too long, but down the road, much further down the road, when there was even a bigger awakening to the possibilities that we're not alone in this universe,
mm-hmm.
that maybe we have visitors on this planet, and then I started to think, well, why has Zimbabwe, Rhodesia, or Rhodesia, Zimbabwe, not known true peace or progress for 50-odd years? Why has it always been some war going on or disruption going on and leading ultimately to what we see today?
Right.
And then, of course, in my surveys and studies and et cetera, we discovered that Zimbabwe has one of the most important 10 vile vortices in the world. Think about that.
Okay.
In the world.
We probably should define what a vile vortex is.
Yeah. In short, it's a good point you brought up there. In short, it's a porthole to other universes or other living worlds
or dimensions.
But the word vile, in my interpretation, means not very good, bad,
okay,
as negative.
Okay, I'm trying to guess that the vortex is not created either very negative or very positive or either or. It's just that it's in the hands now of negative forces.
You got it.
Okay.
That's very well put, actually. So, on discovering that, that made me think, well, that explains how come the flying saucer appeared. There we are in Rhodesia, Zimbabwe, with one of the most important 10-bar vortices in the world. There's no coincidence that that appeared.
Okay.
It had come through a porthole, effectively, from another dimension.
Now, sort of an aside, but maybe not quite, is that I remember when they were talking about David Koresh and what happened in Texas, was that they said that he was in Jerusalem, and in Jerusalem, which they tried to explain at the time, had a similar thing with a lot of UFO activity, and that they thought that a lot of maybe visitors or maybe extraterrestrials or maybe other dimensional creatures came to Jerusalem all the time, and some of them would find somebody that looked vulnerable, single him out, and start talking to him. He'd hear voices and think he was hearing the voice of God, and do whatever they told him. And they thought that David Koresh fell into that. They call it the Jerusalem syndrome.
Well, actually, I'm glad you brought that up, Jim, because subsequent to my journeys to date, once I found that my country, my homeland, where I was born, had this vile vortex, as I started doing further research to find, actually, Israel has one of the most important what they call Q sites to the inner earth core.
Okay.
All right, so we're talking Zimbabwe with a porthole to the external world.
Okay.
And Israel, Jerusalem, actually, where there's recently been quite a bit of problems, as you know, with Gaza.
Yes, I think there has almost always been some kind of trouble in Jerusalem.
Now think on that.
In Israel, right.
Yeah, think why. Because you have this inner earth portal to the inner earth crystal cities, which is another subject altogether.
Right.
So now you've got two examples, very good examples. You've got Zimbabwe, which is totally devastated in comparison to 40, 50 years ago.
It was the breadbasket of Africa.
It was at the time, but now it's been totally decimated with problems of one sort or the other.
Including very strange outbreaks of disease.
Exactly. But coupled to that, in the last 60 years,
yes,
or certainly since 1947, 48, or was it 49 actually, when Israel gained its independence, there's been war, and more war. Disruption. So they've got two parallel examples. So once you start digging deeper into why these particular areas of Earth have these problems, these disruptions, there alone is Zimbabwe, just two countries we're talking about, with one of the world's most important vile vortices, and Israel with one of the world's most important what we call Q sites. So now you start going deeper and deeper and deeper, and you start finding these all over the world. Did you know Iraq has also got one of the world's most important inner earth portals?
Okay. We could call these stargates.
You can, yeah.
Okay.
Stargates.
Okay. Now, what I heard was the ancient stargates would not allow anyone to go through with anything but organic substance on. They could, if they were wearing clothes that were not organic, they would come out naked on the other side. If they tried to bring a gun through, the gun would disintegrate. However, supposedly there are some new stargates. I don't know what they mean by new, but these, they can ship arms through, and I don't think that could very well be a very good thing, and I'll probably edit that out anyway.
Sorry to interrupt, Jim, but this is, I believe, because both you and I are on the same wavelength, and one of the main reasons we've been brought together in this lifetime is to expand on this very subject for listeners down the road, because there's a lot of knowledge input. Mm-hmm. But if it'll help you today, we need to, I guess, find where the motivation came for seeking sanity.
Right. That's what I was aiming at before.
Yeah, but I'm glad you went on to the other subject, because when you come to talking politics, you can talk surface politics that we are engaged in every day, and you've got to consider intergalactic politics, that there are bigger decisions being made in the intergalactic level vibration that affect our more limited third dimension.
Right.
Vibration.
Right. Well, what the reason I brought up the initiation that you had into the African tribe's inner circle was because from the way you describe it, that's where you gained a whole lot of insight into what's happening in other dimensions or other worlds or other planets. And I'm going to leave this completely open-ended, because I'm not sure whether they are alternate dimensions or alternate worlds or what, but you've had more experience with that in this lifetime than I have. So let's...
Well, it's a good time to bring in that tribe, because another awakening experience for me was when we were called up, whether we liked it or not, to be conscripted for the Rhodesian Army. Mm-hmm. Because talking about politics, we had what they called, I term, a terrorist war. Others term, for suitability, a liberation war.
Yeah.
Okay, but it just depends which side of the coin you're on. Okay, so all men on attaining the age of 18 were conscripted into the army, which turned out to actually be another turning point in my life, because having researched further again, I found actually we were fighting effectively the Russians and Chinese on our borders. One group of so-called, let's call them insurgents, being led by infamous Mr. Robert Mugabe from Mozambique, who the Chinese were backing. And on the other border, which then was called Zambia, we had Mr. Joshua Nkoma from the Matabele tribe. And I'm going to lead to the Matabele tribe, because they're the ones who inducted me in the army, and it's quite an interesting story.
Right.
So you've got Robert Mugabe, who's a Mashona, or Manica, the majority tribe out in Mozambique, sending insurgents in to take over the country by force if necessary. Then you've got Joshua Nkomo, Matabele, minority tribe in Zambia, but being backed by Russia. So if you look what's happened to the world subsequently, remember it was the Soviet Union,
right,
which subsequently disintegrated, but they're raising a head again now,
right,
starting to be on the march again.
I mentioned before that the reason the gas prices have dropped so radically lately is because the governmental forces, or maybe the string pullers behind the governmental forces, are trying to unfund the Russians, whose economy was based on petroleum, gasoline, oil. And it was because they had devalued oil in 1980, in the mid-80s, that the Russians, the Soviets, could not afford to pay their armies enough so that they could send them in and put down all the little rebellions, all the states that were breaking off from them, all the satellites.
There's so many different topics and subjects that lead off to this that we could spend hours, but if we just get back to this a second.
Right, this is what a web we weave here, huh?
Yeah, okay. It's true. But if we just get back to those two statements I've made to you now,
right,
you've got the Chinese and you've got the Russians at our border.
Right.
Why would they be at our border? Think about it logically, after what I've said about a vile vortex. By the way, Zimbabwe also has one of the most important intergalactic alien bases on the Mozambique-Zimbabwe border. So now we're getting into the more intergalactic connected politics, right? Mm-hmm. Now we start seeing why They were jostling to own this valuable piece of real estate. And there we were, fighting for sanity, shall we call it.
Yes.
Okay, now, so off I go to the army, mm-hmm. in Matabele land, to the second city of Zimbabwe, right. called Bulawayo.
Bulawayo.
Okay, it's still called that today because it's actually a Matabele word. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's where the Matabeles are from.
Right.
And after the initial training, etc., I was sent to the National Game Reserve to do 7-day depth patrolling on the lookout for terrorists.
7-day what?
Depth patrol.
Depth. Okay.
Deep.
Not death, well, depth. Okay, not sorry.
Well, unfortunately, for a number, it did actually mean death, but mm-hmm. Depth patrolling.
Okay.
Deep incursions into the tribal areas, as they used to be called.
Okay.
So, it was while there, I was also seconded to the Wildlife Department. Mm-hmm. And I saw so much devastation.
Poaching.
Illegal poaching. That also stuck in my mind. Mm-hmm. I thought, what's going on here? That these beautiful creatures, and you want to see how some of them suffer, just to get a horn, for example, from a rhino, yeah. and the rest of the carcass is just wasted. Or you actually see a beautiful leopard caught in a trap. And that was another deep impression. And this is leading up to the motivation of this book.
Right.
Remembering the book is not totally of my volition. It's inspired from the higher energies or intelligences in what they call automatic writing. A lot of the writing just took place as I was at the keyboard.
Okay.
It just flowed. And the gist of it being political in a way, in that I as a youngster had seen a perfectly healthy, vibrant breadbasket of Africa country be snapped away from a responsible leadership after an agreement had been reached, mm-hmm. whether we liked it or not, and where we lost everything to where it is today, less than 30 years later, where it is a dying land. But in the main, for the majority, that liberation was meant to liberate.
Yes.
You get my meaning.
It's like doublespeak from 1984.
Yeah, but motivation behind this book, and it is political mm-hmm. to a degree,
right,
is the reflection of a perfectly healthy country that had agreed to accept majority rule, but over a sustainable period of 15 years, from 1965 to 1980, ironically, mm-hmm. but where our black brethren, if you like, would have been like the co-pilots being taught and slowly would have been taking over mm-hmm. the country from the whites, but with the whites still in tow. And I had to think, well, why did they want to get rid of us overnight? Because they didn't want a smooth transition. They wanted devastation. Who wanted it? The off-planet influences.
Okay. Now, how did you come to the realization that it was off-planet influences and not, for instance, just greedy Soviets or greedy Chinese or something like that who were calling the shots?
This has taken many, many years to come to this realization. Mm-hmm. You know, as you dig deeper and you look under the surface more, you find more. And then I started thinking, for example, the invasion of Iraq
right.
was based on a lie. Has been proven.
We know that now, yes.
But a lot of people suspected it at the time.
Yep.
A lot of arms were twisted. And then if you go and do your research, you find that country actually has got one of Earth's most important inner Earth access points. So there's a battle for that access point. It's not oil. It's not the people they're caring about. It's who of the off-planet invaders, and there are a number, control. Because that controls the Earth's grid, which is an interdimensionally designed grid. Mm-hmm. So there's like a war within a war going on. We're getting slightly off subject here, okay? But it's interesting, isn't it?
Yes. And from what I read, and I haven't had time to read very much of your book, but it seems to me that this information came to you from the Metabili.
Yeah. What happened was I was patrolling with, shall we call it a black-trained platoon.
Right.
Called the Rhodesian African Rifles, which were primarily made up of Matabele warrior soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw the impact of seeing these animals being trapped in these terrible, terrible devices that are made by the illegal post. They saw the impact it had on me. And they thought there's something about this Murungu. A Murungu in African means white man.
A honky.
A honky. A honky means a white man. Murungu, okay?
A Murungu.
And I was invited by one of the corporals, actually, who was with the Rhodesian African Rifles patrolling with us, right, to go to his village when we were off one weekend. He said, I want you to come and meet my chief. I just have a feeling there's something about you that's different, even though you're a white man, and the world's been told you white men of Africa are out and out racist, and you treat us badly, which we know is not true because we are fighting for you. We're not on Mugabe's side or Mukoma's side, because we know there's been a lot of propaganda used against this country, especially the white man. And I agreed.
Mm-hmm.
And I do agree. And I said, yes, of course, I'd love to. So off I went to meet the chief. Now, I'm not talking about the chief just of his village. I'm talking about the regional chief.
Okay.
Happened to be his uncle. See, and then I thought, well, why does he want me to meet this chief? It's because this chief is an esteemed man,
mm-hmm,
of history. And it's come down that the chieftism has been handed down the centuries or generations. And I took it as an absolute privilege.
Okay.
That
good,
here,
yes,
wasn't prejudice. These were people accepting others as equals, based purely on what they could measure on that person from their heart. So I went along there, unknown to me, that this particular chief was extremely worried about what's happening to the country.
Yes.
He knew it was going the wrong way,
mm-hmm,
but he was particularly also worried about what was happening to the wildlife in the area. And mm-hmm, he said to me, when I met the chief, he said to me, all in his regalia, etc., etc., he said, I've heard about you from my nephew, and I'd like to induct you into our tribe as a Matabele from a past life connection to us. So that's another subject again.
I did read that part.
All right. So I went through the whole process, which is quite a process, so I won't labor on it. But as I was departing, he said, I know you're not going to spend the rest of this life in this country, and we're sad about that. But you will have this with you to connect to the African ancestors for the rest of your life, and you will get messages coming through from them.
Mm-hmm.
That was the whole idea. And he said, one day you will write a book about all this. And it'll be a little bit based on fact of what you're seeing and what you're experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
But we want the message from, we want to give you a message, Mr. White Man, from us, a black man, but we're all humans, that we do not agree with what's happening to this country. We do not agree what's happening to you white people. And we know you're going to disperse in this country. Will not be the same again when that happens. We want you to know we're not all against you that is being portrayed. And we want you to understand one day you will write a book, and the book will be motivated, and it will be based on wildlife preservation, ecotourism, which, as you know, works in harmony,
right,
in balance, getting the ecosystems balanced, which includes all creatures within a zone. But we want to show it as our apology to you, from us, the black man of Zimbabwe and of Africa, of what's being done to you, because we know you are African in the heart. And this book will come to you, and at the right time it'll come to you, where you will be invited back to Africa as white Africans, but you'll be coming to help save our wildlife. It'll be like you were in the army, but not fighting black men, fighting for justice, so it can benefit all communities. So that was the motivation. I'm talking well over 30 years ago when he said this to me. Okay, and I realized in those days of Rhodesia and a certain part of Zimbabwe, actually maybe the first 5 years, that Zimbabwe had one of the most efficient wildlife preservation systems working in the world. It was an example to the world. And that was a perfect vehicle to show that the white is not against the black, or the black is not against the white, by joining forces, bringing back the old, shall we call, white Rhodesian soldiers, working alongside the black Zimbabwe people. Here was the common denominator: respect for a common heritage called wildlife.
Right. I think I read in your, in what I read in your book, that you said it wouldn't be the color of the skin that mattered, but the color of the heart.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And that's what they were saying to me. And they said, sadly, we see you and your likes leaving, but your heart will always be here in this land, because this land is, has past life connections for you, brother. We've been together before, he said to me. Maybe when I was a white man and you were a black man. He said, but we've been together before. And he said, it will be based a little, this book will be politically motivated, because it will set a basic new politics for Africa, of partnerships. And you can only get partnerships really working with respect for one another and everything else within an environment. But he said it'll work because the gods from above will be behind it. And the white man who's born and raised in these parts of the world will be welcomed back, but he'll be shown to be good this time in the interests of the country as a whole, which is wildlife preservation.
Okay, and the propaganda machine would not be working when this happened.
It won't, because it won't be allowed to work, because the invitation will come from the Africans themselves.
Okay.
And it will, the book actually shows it's just as the last white president of South Africa is just about to step down and hand over to the first black president in our history of South Africa. And he's told, look, before you go, we want you to give a very good image of the whites, because we know what's been done against you and what's been said about you, especially in the Rhodesian case, was not accurate. A lot of propaganda was used against you. So it's actually the last white president.
Author?
No, I haven't given them a particular name.
Oh, okay. This is okay. The person in your book.
In the book. In the book. Okay. Who's told you've got a year to build up the white man's image in Africa. To do, we want South Africa to be totally behind this new experiment, you can call it, of wildlife conservation across the board, leading to other avenues within our future politics based on joint common causes.
Okay.
So he's got this year, and it folds from there, whereby he actually, at the end of it all, when the first phase of the exercise is done in Zimbabwe, where the president has gone up in so much esteem, not only in the African continent, but worldwide, that inviting these people back now is the natural course of events. So it's like reversing all the propaganda, the untruth. Because do you know, Rhodesia was measured as having one of the very highest highest cross-ethnic group relations in the world.
Best.
The best. Black on white working together was actually one of the very best. Countries used to marvel, but they wouldn't be allowed to be told, because it wouldn't suit certain agendas. People would then say, well, why are you destroying this infrastructure if it's so good, if the world was allowed to know that? So they painted us as bad people. That in every society, there are one or two bad eggs. But in the main, we were just like chalk and cheese in comparison to South Africa, which had legislated apartheid separation.
Yes.
We never did. We had really wonderful, harmonious relations. And on the top of my friendship list were two or three Africans before my white friends. So it's reversal of all that propaganda and justice finally being delivered to the people as a whole.
Okay.
For that book.
And now back to your book. What I read is does it focus on prophecy for the future? Does it focus on what has happened in the past? What's going on now?
That's a good question, because it takes in the past and a lot of the propaganda used with us, against us.
Right.
It takes in agreements that were reached leading up to present day of what's happened from a vibrant, total vibrant situation to a totally defunct situation. And the writer's observation of why that's been allowed to happen, coupled with this interdimensional politics.
Right.
If you get my meaning.
Right.
So it looks to the future as well.
Right.
But it needs to create the means to reaching that future.
Yes. And where is your book available?
Do you know what I'm doing at the moment, Jim, is I'm offering it directly off the site, which...
your website.
Yeah, which is... am I allowed to say it? Where you can find it?
Yes, I think so. If Martin doesn't like it, he can edit it out.
Okay. Well, it's at www.nextagemission.com, and it's down the left-hand side index, and it's actually titled Seeking Sanity.
Seeking Sanity. So that's www.nextagemission.com.
Yeah. And,
okay.
It's,
and it's all small letters, no spaces.
No, well, yeah. Yeah, this
Next Age Mission.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, the address.
Okay.
At the moment, we're just doing what we're calling a test drive with the book, selling it directly off the site. However, there have been some interesting inquiries where we'll be offering it in electronic means.
As an e-book?
As an e-book, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like market research at the moment.
Yes.
Yeah, and we've had a lot of interest in the concept.
Okay, have you looked into Lulu and Amazon and...
Well, all my other books are available at Lulu.
Lulu, okay.
There's about 24 books there.
And Cafe Press, I think.
Yeah, we're just signing up on the old Cafe Press now to get that made available. But most of my activity's been off Lulu.
Okay.
.com.
Let's hope that me talking about Lulu and Cafe Press is not the kiss of death, and that the dark forces will... pounce and shut them down or something.
No ways, no ways. Look, the world needs a new order. Well, I don't like using that word.
The new world order is a catchphrase for...
Yeah, I don't like using that. We need new thinking. We need dynamic thinking, thinking outside the box. There's too much suffering going on, too much poverty. And it's got worse, has it not, with this huge recession. So they need places like Lulu and Cafe Press. They need... For sanity's sake, huh? Seeking sanity.
Seeking sanity, right. And in a lot of ways, I'm thinking that this recession is part of voodoo economics. Like, it isn't real. It's something they're trying to convince us is happening so that we all go, and they can get rid of a lot of people and throw a lot of people to the wolves and pay fewer people and continue their madness.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's be honest. What's the biggest tool that's used against people is the fear factor, fear.
Economic warfare.
Yeah, but, I mean, we're going down an avenue there, which I hope we'll be invited on to discuss, because it's very important. You know, the thing is, Jim, there are people in this world, like you and I, who we feel other people suffering, and we know a lot of it's not necessary.
Yes.
And a lot of it filters down from a minority at the top. And this is what happened in my country.
Mm-hmm.
In my country, the people, majority are suffering. And I'm talking, that country is just about all about dead. Yet right at the top of the pyramid, you've got one or two, three, who are never going to go hungry. I'm never going to starve. And that seems to be a pattern that's spreading throughout the world, especially right now.
Yes.
So seeking sanity actually is what the world needs, let alone my country, Zimbabwe. If you think about it.
Yes.
We need sanity to reign.
Precious
again.
Little sanity to go around. But
well, that's right. But the thing is, Jim, the book is also designed to try and open the conscience to somebody else's suffering, somebody else's pain. Maybe this recession is going to be part of people stopping and thinking, well, really, are these materialistic goods and money in the bank, is that all that this world's about? Or should I care about other more important things, i.e. my neighbor?
Right.
Is my neighbor as well off as me? Has my neighbor got food? Maybe this deep recession, which could become a depression,
right,
might get enough people stopping and thinking something's not right.
Well, I had thought maybe 30 years ago when I was worried about the state of the world that maybe the best insurance policy you could have is if your neighbors know that if anything happens to them, you'll take care of their family. So when something happens to you, they will take care of your family.
Well, let's be honest. I'm going to give you a very quick example back in England, and this was only a few years ago. Mm-hmm. There was, just down the road from where I live, actually, there was this little old lady. When I say little old lady, she's about 87, who hadn't been seen for 7 days. She lived in what we call a terraced house, a row of five houses.
Right.
She hadn't been seen for 7 days. But it wasn't the neighbors who noticed she hadn't been seen. It was the milkman who used to deliver her milk. And when he went to deliver the seventh bottle of milk, he thought, but this milk's not being drunk. It's a whole week's supply here. And his mind was, maybe she's gone away and she hasn't told me, as she usually does. So he inquired, and he went and knocked on the neighbor's door. Have you seen Rose lately? Come to think of it, actually, I've been so damn busy I haven't even thought of Rose as the neighbor. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they eventually found the son in Coventry, I think. Okay. And interestingly enough, the son had been so busy in his life he hadn't thought of mum. Anyway, he did come down to that part of the world, mm-hmm, opened the door, there she was lying dead.
Oh.
In the middle of winter. And the neighbors hadn't even had time or inclination, perhaps, to even think about it. This is where we've gone lost.
Right.
In this world. So we do need to get back to seeking sanity.
Yes.
And this is just an example of one way of getting, of caring for the environment as a whole.
Okay. And is there anything that we haven't touched on that you feel we need to talk about today, or?
There's a lot. Well, we need a few more sessions, don't we, really?
Probably, but
what about if you ask me for a prediction of what's going to happen in Zimbabwe?
Okay.
If you want to end on that note.
That would be a good note, yes. So, Rob, going along with your book, with Seeking Sanity, what do you see is the near future for Zimbabwe?
In the short term, maybe even medium term, Jim, I'm not too optimistic, although there's been a recent development of this formation of this, what do they call it, joint working government. I'm sure there's a different word for it, where the MDC have gone and agreed. I'm sure their arms have been twisted. They've got no choice but to accept the conditions, but at least it's a start. I believe this man, Robert Mugabe, is probably one of the cleverest and shrewdest, trickiest people alive, because he knows he's got powers behind him that some of us don't even believe exist. So, however, I know he's getting old, okay? That just natural trends means that ultimately he's going to be leaving this plane. In the interim, what's needed is just to look after the majority, start feeding them and start treating this cholera outbreak. But I do believe my book will be what will happen within the next 3 to 4 years. The whites will be invited. Please come back.
Okay, so it does end on an optimistic note.
It does. And do you know why?
Why?
Because different influences on Earth arrive. More positive, more light-being type energies, where Zimbabwe's vile vortex will be recalibrated to a positive vortex.
Okay.
But it won't be purely by human endeavor. We've got to take the first step or two. We will get greater interdimensional help or intervention.
You've been listening to the Above Politics Show. If you have a comment, suggestion, or an opposing view, please deliver it at abovepolitics.com. The views expressed on the Above Politics Show do not necessarily reflect the staff and management of the Above Network LLC or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening, and please continue to deny apathy.